Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. I am your host, Martha Reddick, and this week we are talking about holding space for decision making and fostering autonomy. But this is an extremely special week because it is my first ever live podcast, and I am live podcasting from Nanny Palooza, which
I just wanted them to know we were really here.
Yeah, should we do voila?
We should. Oh, yeah. Okay. Voila'd. I was the only one.
We say
you all forgot.
Yeah. From Nanny Palooza.
Voila!
These audio spikes are wonderful. My guest this week is Katie Leinecke, who has been on the podcast so many times before. I'm not going to ask you to list your references again, because if you haven't listened to any of the episodes with Katie Leinecke, she is one of the most lovely nannies, and I adore every episode that
Thank
she
you.
Is on.
Thank you.
So
for your impressive love.
Go find them and listen to them. judging from the boundaries seminar that was today, that is a needed thing in our field, and we have an episode about setting boundaries that Katie was on, and I highly recommend it.
With children and with your bosses.
Yes.
Which is really important for both.
Yes. Extremely important. So go look that up. But today we're talking about fostering autonomy and holding space for decision making. Mm-hmm. And so let's get started talking about that.
Let's do it.
So when you are nannying, there are so many opportunities to offer choices to the kids that you nanny. But a lot of times in the hustle and bustle mm-hmm. of everyday life, mm-hmm. you overlook them. From the moment they wake up to what they wear, to what cup they drink out of, all of those are opportunities to let them make decisions. And they might not seem important, but those decisions add up mm-hmm. to an adult that can make a decision for themselves, which is something that ends up lacking in our society, I think, right now, is that we are creating these adults that have been told what to do mm-hmm. their entire educational career. and then they get out in the real world and they're like, wait, what? What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. Even personal life as well. I don't know about you guys, but my home life, they were wonderful. My parents were wonderful, but they had a lot of guided, already planned choices or expectations. And so that was challenging to come out of that kind of like environment and be like, oh, now what do I do? What shall I choose?
Yeah. And so some ways that I, with my kids, try to help foster autonomy are I really look at their day, and I have sat down and written it out before mm-hmm. and looked for ways that I can offer them more choices throughout the day. So one of the ways, and Parker Guidry, who was on the male nanny episode. I learned this from him because he is very fashionable, if you follow him on Instagram, and a way that he is. He did a court look. Oh, he was on jury duty this week, and he had a different court look every day, and it was wonderful.
Awesome.
Yeah. Look it up. But something that he really valued with his nanny kids is letting them pick out their clothes from a really, really, really early age. And yes-anding anything they picked, as long as important body parts were covered, you know? Right. Like, they can't go out in a swimsuit if it's winter in Chicago. But letting them decide what they want to wear. And then in dealing with the natural consequences of maybe choosing not a great choice. Mm-hmm. So if they are choosing to wear shorts and it is a brisk fall day, talking to them about that, about maybe make a different choice, but not forcing them to make that different choice so that they can deal with the consequences.
Right. And that's something we talk about in the boundaries episode as well, is letting them feel the natural consequences of their actions, which we actually heard about in many of the workshops here. I've been really impressed with the resources available at Nannypalooza. And you'll find that if you're allowing them to do that, you're not the enforcer of the rules, like the power struggle workshop, how to have power tools for that. You're not enforcing the rule. They're just experiencing the consequences of what they've already chosen. So that way you're not the bad guy. You're on their team. You're letting them have power to make this decision. And actually a lot of learning takes place in that moment where if you force them to do what you know is maybe a better choice, if you will, or like a more... more appropriate, like, clothing selection, if we're talking about temperatures, then they don't actually get the firsthand knowledge. And that's where all the learning comes from the sensory experience, like play. That's why play is such a great teacher, because they're actually getting their hands on whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah.
So, worrying less about with clothing, about the fact that their colors don't match, and more about empowering them to say, I picked this outfit.
Right.
And in fact, one of my little guys, a few weeks ago, he had a spot on his pants, and he was like, I don't want to wear these to school. I want to look nice at school. And I was like, that's great. Let's go upstairs and change it out. But he knew that he could because he had gotten them messy at breakfast and wanted to make that choice. He really respects school, which is such a lovely thing that I wouldn't want to beat down for some time schedule that doesn't exist.
Something about, and on time schedules too, because a lot of times allowing them choice and autonomy is real challenging. Yes, we got a lot of knowing head nods. You can't see it, but I like to narrate what's happening. And it's hard to create the space and the time for that. But if you know ahead of time, like the little girl I nanny for has just learned to tie her shoes. So now I want her to practice that, but also I don't want us to be late. I don't want us to like run into issues. I don't want her to be stressed tying them. So about 10 minutes before we really need to leave, I'm like, it's about time to get your shoes tied, just so you know. And so she'll go over and she can tie it because she's very vocal and verbal, which is something we've worked on a lot. And she's like, I don't like when I feel rushed by you. And I'm like, great. Yeah, right? She's awesome. Good to know. She's about to turn 7 next week. And she's been able to be like, that makes me feel embarrassed. Before, like, other things, she's very vocal and in touch with her feelings, which is wonderful. So I don't want her to feel rushed. And to hear that and be like, okay, like, you've told me your need. I'd love to meet your need. What can we do as a team to make sure you have enough time and my need and your need? Because she also gets really stressed about being late. And then in the car, I have to be like, what if we're late to swimming? Like, we're 30 minutes early right now. So, like, and it's only a 15-minute drive. We're going to make it, I swear. But, like, how you can meet both of those needs for the child and for yourself, to have them do it themselves so they feel that they can contribute and they can take care of themselves, because that's a really important feeling to develop in a child. It's important for us as adults, too, to feel like I can do what I need to do to get through my day. It helps.
Yes.
A lot.
And also, we can take on that burden of planning. Mm-hmm. So we can watch the clock mm-hmm. for them. And that is something that, as nannies,
yeah.
it is already part of most of our brain. Mm-hmm. I think most of us have a pretty good internal clock.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then I'm sure that you have found ways to compensate
mm-hmm.
For that. And so keeping that in mind as you go throughout your day of, okay, this activity is going to take, I should plan twice as long yeah. for this activity.
If it's a new one, especially.
Yeah, if it's a new one. And you are in the training stage of autonomy, of where you're still in the we do.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the I do, and starting to work towards the we do
mm-hmm.
of let's work as a team and do this together. And then when you change over to the you do part of it, where the nanny kids take over those reins, going back to doubling the time again.
Mm-hmm.
So for every step of that I do, we do, you do, re-giving it that time grace because yeah. otherwise you run into issues and then yeah.
And it's definitely a transition period too, as all of you know. And it takes a lot of times the parents aren't ready to let go of the reins to the children yet. You know, like you have to be like, she really can wipe herself. She really can take a bath and wash her hair. She really can, you know, like sit in the car without the side seat now that the seat belt is high enough. And so sometimes they need a gentle nudge, because if it's their first child, a lot of times you might have more experience working with many different children than the parent, if it's their first or their only, or maybe they've had children for 4 years, but maybe you have 10 years of experience. So in many ways, you're in a better position to help them let go of the reins and change it over to their child. Which will in turn benefit their household, because it will loosen the power struggle. As nannies, you don't need to fight them if they're like, today, I don't want to tie my shoe, I want you to do it. You don't need to fight them on that, because they do it most of the time. Sometimes we all need help. And guess what? When they're 18, we know they're going to be tying their own shoes. But as a parent, sometimes it's really scary. You're like, oh no, my child's not going to know how to tie their shoe. And they're like, maybe they just need a day off. I also need a day off sometimes from doing my own duties, you know? So
yeah.
creating space for them to say, like, today I do want help. And that's, I'm sure all of you know, too, the younger ones, when they're starting, you're like, do you want to do it? Or do you want me to help you do it? Because they're very specific. They know what they do and don't want.
Yeah.
And they will tell you.
And something, if you are running into a child that is maybe struggling mm-hmm. with taking the reins, that is scared of failure, in taking it over, a phrase that I use, and it's from Montessori education, is, what part would you like my help with?
Mm.
So if you get to a point where you're like, I know they can do this, and they're not taking that leap of mm-hmm. faith, asking what part would you like my help with mm-hmm. helps them break it down into smaller, more manageable size pieces that they can, and then you're still helping
yeah.
them. They feel supported, but they're also learning and making their own decisions and mm. choices.
Also, in the early childhood education world, in classes, they talk about steering away from comforting a child by saying, it's easy. Because if
yeah.
it's easy and they can't do it, then they fail to do something that's easy and they feel terrible about themselves. When in an adult's mind, it sounds comforting, like, you'll be able to do it, it's fine, it's easy. And if they've done it, and it's easy, they can't feel good about themselves because it was easy, so it wasn't anything special. So sometimes by saying, like, hey, like, tying your shoes, learning to tie your shoes is really hard. And I know it can be confusing and it's a lot to think about, but I know you're a kid who takes time and can think about things and can try again. I think you might be able to do it. And just giving them that space to mess up where they don't feel like they failed something. You know, like, I get that way about, like, wiffle ball. People are like, it's fine. I'm like, yeah, but I fear failure and embarrassment. So, like,
you don't understand.
Know.
It is not fine.
In fact, our friends did a kickball league this summer, and they kept being like, Katie, you want to go? And I was like, I fear embarrassment in public settings about things that should be easily accessible in theory. So it's like giving them the out, if you will, to be like, it is hard. And it's hard when you're trying things. And remembering that children don't know. I've had moments before where I'm like, I asked a child to do something, and then I watched them try to do it, and I was like, oh, you know what? That's my bad, because you've never done this before. No one's explained it to you. Let me pause and tell you how I might do it, and then if you do it slightly differently, that's okay. If the job still gets done the way that is most comfortable for you, good for you. We found two ways to do it. How great.
And that is another technique for helping foster autonomy, is having it as a sort of challenge to say, I wonder how many different ways we can do mm-hmm. this task. And so then going through and figuring out together mm-hmm. and like, they get so silly and it's so lovely because they're like, well, we could do it wearing a blue shirt. And I'm like, yeah, great. You're right. That is a completely different way to do this task. Or we could do it walking on our hands. And I'm like, go for it. If you can do that, way. Yeah. I'm like, I know that I cannot and I will hurt myself. Mm-hmm. But if you want to try, I will spot you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, or, you know, we could do it after we drank apple juice. They come up with really fun ways right. and it makes you giggle and it makes your like menial tasks more fun,
and it builds their confidence in being a member of like a problem solving team. So we talk about two in conflict resolution. There's a 5-step method, which is another, a whole other podcast.
Yeah,
but if you follow this method, eventually you say, you restate the whole problem, you're like, gosh, it sounds like we have, you know, 3 kids who really want to play with this truck and we only have 1 truck. What do you think we could do about that? And as nannies, we know. I'm not asking for my benefit. Like, I know what I could do about that. I know what you could do about it as well. But giving them the space, and then, like, in a lot of the classes I've taken, they've been like, and then you should silently count to 20 and look like you're thinking about it so that they have the space to think and answer. Because they're also, these are skills that they're sharpening. No one's born learning how to share. They don't know how to share. You have to
In
teach
fact,
them.
Evolutionarily yeah. speaking, shocking,
I know.
Sharing is not necessarily something that is always yeah. evolutionarily good for you.
Yeah.
Though, as humans, that yeah. is one of the reasons that we are the way we are,
yeah.
is that we learned how to share.
As a side note, too, because of I love words, children also, in abstract terms, like sharing is a very abstract idea. Like, what does that mean? But if you say taking turns, children are more willing and likely to do it, which is like this bizarre, it's just like a shift of how you say the same idea, but they can
take turns better with a timer too.
Yes. And that's another way, you're not the enforcer. The timer goes off and you can say like, oh, how many minutes? And then the child will say like, we pick under 5. Like I also teach preschool. So we give them that script, like, I want to use that when you're done. Can I use that when you're done? And the children almost always say yes, because it implies that you're done. And that makes them feel powerful. And you didn't rip something right out of their hands. And it respects the child and gives them dignity. And then the other child will say, how many minutes? And then they'll say, sometimes they'll be like 20. And we're like, too many. Like, why don't you choose 5 and under? Like, what would you like? And they'll say like 2 or 5. And then we set a timer. And then the teacher's not enforcing it. And usually the other child gives it up immediately after you walk away because they had the power to decide. It's isn't it magical? It's so magical. Like, just not ripping something out of someone's hands.
Back to fear of failure mm-hmm. and how fostering autonomy helps with that. In the book Teaching with Love and Logic, which is one of my favorite teaching philosophies, it's by Jim Fay. He talks about when a child says, I can't do it, or I'm going to be bad at this, or something like that, a good response is, aren't you glad I don't believe that? Mm-hmm. which just puts the end to their worries mm-hmm. Because then you already believe in them. Mm-hmm. You are offering, mm-hmm. I already believe in you.
Yeah.
And let's figure out together how you can do it instead of focusing on the ways that you might not do it, quote unquote, mm-hmm. perfectly. And don't say that part to them.
Yeah.
That's your inner monologue.
But also exposing ways that you haven't done it perfectly, because you are one of your child's greatest resources mm-hmm. to get through life. like their parents, and by sharing your own experiences, like the little girl, and Annie Four just started taking piano, and she's like, she's so psyched about it. And they have a group lesson every month, and she was having a little recital, and she was playing like a 5-note song, but was really worried because she was playing in front of other children. And she kept talking to her parents, like, what if I'm bad? What if I'm bad? And they tried to ease her worries, and she mentioned it to me because I was the one taking her. And she was like, what if I'm bad and then I'll never be a great piano player? And I was like, oh, or she's like, what if I mess up and I'll never be a great piano player? I said, if you mess up, it's probably a sign that you're going to be a great piano player, because great piano players mess up all the time because they're playing all the time. And then she was like, because Martha and I were both actors. She's still an actor. I'm recovering actor.
Sometimes.
But she was like, did you ever mess up when you were acting? And I was like, just so frequently.
So yeah, often.
And like telling them stories. And she thought that was hilarious. And I was like, sometimes actors don't even come on stage for their scene. They don't even, like, grown-ups do this. People who are famous do this. And that was like a huge relief, because she's a very smart child. She was reading chapter books at 4. So she's got like a high performance level. And trying to like alleviate that anxiety in her world of doing everything right, which is not necessarily her parents. They don't put that on her. But she knows she's like above. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she's sort of sensing that she's like above her peers in many ways. And so she's putting it on herself. And so just trying to take away the burden of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And like, it doesn't mean. And one day she was like, Katie, what if I get a bad grade in high school? What if I don't get all A's? And I was like, that's probably going to happen. I'm going to be real honest with you. You probably will mess things up in high school for sure. And she was like, really? Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was like, it's in fact, if you don't, you might be doing it wrong. So, you know, like by not messing up.
And also to that, when kids approach me with that sort of talk, I say, if you are making all A's, it might be a sign that your classes are too easy for you. So
you're here to learn.
Yeah, yeah, you're here to learn.
Yeah.
And in that same vein, I also, and I always start with myself and then spread it to the children when they are ready. But I do a dance party when I make a mistake. a mistake dance party. And so if I make a mistake, and it doesn't need to be immediately fixed.
Yeah.
If no one is in danger, then I say, I made a mistake. And then we fix it, because I try to celebrate mistakes.
Yeah.
And I waved my arms back and forth for listeners.
It was awesome. I think
it was.
We all
I pointed
it.
My
yeah.
fingers and I waved them
it
up and down.
Yeah,
thank you.
We're going to take a video of everyone doing it.
Yes.
I'm making false promises, but we'll see.
We'll see.
Real promises.
Another, I love segues, so here we go. Buckle up. We're changing gears. Another thing about this, if they're feeling anxiety about something, is offering them choices, which is part of what this podcast is about. If a child feels out of control or feels like they can't do something, give them small, digestible bites of choice. Like, okay, well, the first thing I might do is choose some paper. Would you like to choose black paper or white paper or something else? And then they can choose, and they start to gain confidence in their ability to make choices. And it gives a lot of peace to many children, and a sense of control is a basic human need. So if you can, for adults as well as children, and children have far less control in their life. So if you can give them a choice at every turn when it's appropriate for them and safe for them to do so, like, you can also frame your choices in a way where both answers are correct.
Yes.
So like, instead of being like, would you like a vegetable for lunch, or what vegetable would you like? You can say, would you like carrots or peas with lunch today? The fact that you're having a vegetable is part of the question. You're not having a vegetable with your, you know, like that's included and it's implied. And so you'll be surprised how they, even if they wouldn't normally be like, I'll have carrots, they'll be like, oh, I'll have carrots. You know, like, if those are my choices, I'll choose that one. And it gives them a sense of power. And in that way, they can practice making decisions to become an adult when you have to make very hard decisions and challenging decisions.
And it gives them a stake in the game of eating lunch. Is that because they chose the carrots often, I find that if I gave them a choice, that they eat more of the thing that they might not eat as much of that is healthy for their bodies.
Not a power struggle.
Because it wasn't a power struggle. But
in Teaching with Love and Logic, Jim Fay also says, never offer a choice that you are not okay with.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are offering choices, be very careful. It can't be, do you want to go to the bathroom or not?
Yeah.
When you know that they need to go to the bathroom because you're about to be in the car for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It can be, do you want to go to the bathroom now or in five minutes?
Before or after you put on your shoes.
Yes.
Like, what order?
Yes. So when you are practicing this with your nanny kids, just be cognizant of that it needs to be choices that are okay with you and okay mm-hmm. for the safety of the child.
I will say, too, in the conflict sphere, when children are more likely, like you said, to participate in a decision they had some choice over. If they formulated the decision, they're more likely to go through with it. And so if they found a solution to the conflict and it's okay with both parties, because it's another part, is you ask the other person, do you think that's fair? And if they say no, then you go back to, you all think again, or you count to 20 while they think, and then you go back and forth until everybody agrees. And then sometimes they're going to think of ones that you don't think are quite the solution to the problem. Like, and then you have to, if both children think it's fair and it's safe for them, like they can't be like, I'll hit him and take the truck. Is that fair? Yeah. You're like, I can't let you do that because that's not safe. And we don't hit it. We use safe and gentle touches with our friends. So we can't really do that because it's not safe for Timmy. So let's think of something else where we use gentle hands. And so, but sometimes they're like, yeah, I can use it and he can go to the art area. And you're like, do you think that's fair? And sometimes they're like, yeah. And you're like, oh, okay.
Didn't see that coming.
You solved the problem. And then they do that. So sometimes you have to let go of your knowledge of what the like fitting solution is for whatever the issue is. If both children are happy with the solution and it's safe. So it's an interesting, I had once had a child who was like, they called passing gas foofing. And one time they were like, what do you think we could do about that? I said, what do you think we could do about this? And the boy was like, she can foof on me. And I was like, do you think that's fair? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. Like, I guess, like, that's not like a really horrible in the world of, you know, not what I would have reached for in the box of solutions.
Strange choice.
But if that's what you both agree on.
Sure.
And they thought it was hilarious. So it was like a game they played together. So it made more sense. But I was like, not really my, like, that's not how Martha and I solve problems.
No.
So it was outside of my room.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to be over here and I'm going to watch it. Good for you guys. You worked out the problem.
The two of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that teaches them how to like listen to their partners and or their friends in conflict, and how to choose for themselves, because eventually they start doing it without you there, which is like really amazing.
It's so wonderful when that happens.
Are you laughing about the foofing?
Laughing, I'm like playing it out to the adult stage.
Yeah.
Like, listen. You forgot to take out the trash. Well, you can foof on me.
I bet there's a frat that's happened at before. Like, I don't think that's outside the realm of like frat possibilities or like, you know, like older men. I don't know. Yeah.
Toddlers like have the, you know, they kind of act the same, right?
Yeah.
To toddlers.
Similar. Yeah. Or even teenagers. Yeah.
Yes.
Hopefully not in romantic relationships. I don't really know how that translates.
So if both parties like, agree to it, who knows? If both parties agree to it, then that's whatever
now
you
I'm
want.
Now I'm hoping that's a solution with you and your partner.
But who knows?
Yeah, yeah. Open-minded, if it works for both parties.
Great.
Sorry for that, everyone. And now we're back.
And we're back.
Serious podcast.
Very,
Bring
very
home.
Serious.
Bring it home.
Not at all. Well, I think we're to the point where we can open it up for questions or strategies that you use that you find work with holding space for decision making.
Listeners, you can't see, but this is clearly a very smart and capable group of women.
It
if you could
really,
see their
really
faces
is.
In the dance video, look for them in the dance video. They'll be, you'll know.
I guess my comment is a little bit more of a question. Because love all of your examples, but I nanny a 14-month-old who is in the very beginning of stages of, like, being able to stand by sure. herself, you know? And I guess I find myself more and more saying, and it's funny because I didn't even realize, like, it wasn't a decision that I had made to start, like, using this language, but I was like, oh, more than half of my day I'm spending saying, you can do it, mm-hmm. you can do it, it's okay, you can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, she'll turn to me and she'll, you know, kind of point and reach and she'll let me know what she's looking for or asking for, and I'll say, it's okay, like,
right.
you can do it. And I guess I you know, obviously I have kind of that part of it down, but really translating that into something that looks more like independence, I guess, yeah. where it's something that she can feel on her own, right? Where so she's not always turning to me, wait, can I do this? I can do this? Okay, cool. Now I can do that.
Yeah, a lot of that. So
that's a really great question. And actually, a lot of that plays into attachment theory. I don't know if you guys are familiar with, it's like the styles of attachment. You can be securely attached to your parents or caregivers, anxiously attached, or you can have an avoidant attachment style. And they find that the people who have the best the secure attachment, that's like the most emotionally sound, you don't feel like you're going to be abandoned, you're emotionally open to other people, are the people whose parents pick them up when they wanted to be picked up and put them down when they wanted to be put down. Because that can be very hard with a toddler. You don't always want to put them down because then they're going to mess up the living room. They're going to pull out all the pots and pans. They're going to, like, maybe put their hand in something gross that you're like, oh, I wish you hadn't touched that. I once had to pull a bug out of a child's mouth. It was dead, but she tried to, and I was like, no. And she got, like, one crunch in, and I was like, oh, oh. So I pulled it out in pieces. It was really fun. But giving them, right, giving them the freedom to explore or be comforted is a really great way to help them establish autonomy, because they're realizing that their needs can be different than the need of a mom or a dad or a caregiver. And sometimes it's hard because it's harder to offer that. But they do social referencing as well, which is sort of what you mentioned, where they, like, want to do something and then they look at you and they're like, so what do you think? And you're like, mm-hmm. And they look to your face. They also do that when they get injured, where they're like, oh, am I okay? And and you're like, wow, great fall. Look at you. And they're like, oh, I must be fine. So I will keep running.
Oh, I clocked my little girl I didn't realize she was standing up because she doesn't often just stand from sitting. She's usually, like, pulling up on something.
Yeah.
And I, like, turned really quick while closing the dishwasher and just, I felt so bad. I just, like, knocked her to the ground with my knee and I felt so bad. And she just kind of laid there for a minute and she looked at me and I could, like, see the red bump forming on my head. And I was like, I'm so glad that you're okay.
Oh,
like,
safe you are.
Let's have a hug for a minute because I need to make sure you don't pass out.
Yeah.
But, like, just I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah.
And she winced a little bit and then she was like, okay, I am okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you feel like your question was answered?
Or do you have more?
I guess, I don't know, I guess really what is the next step, I guess, is what I'm asking, right? So, like, I have, like, the toddler stage down, but as she begins to do more things mm-hmm. for herself, like, obviously, like, maybe clothing is not something that I'm going to let her have an option with
She's
right
probably
now.
Getting close to certain types of clothing that she can help put on by herself. And that's actually, it just takes forever. So you're like, you got to be in it to win it. Like, start 20 minutes early. But the other thing, too, is Eric Erickson is a psychologist, and he has a field of study. All of these women are like, mm-hmm. They're like nodding their heads, up and down. But if you don't know at home, he's got crises that people are resolving, and the first four are in early childhood, and then they move on to, like, middle childhood and adulthood. But there's the first one is trust versus mistrust. They're trying to figure out what the world is like. The second one, I think, is shame versus autonomy. Shame and self-doubt versus autonomy. Initiative versus I have to look it up now, but I love Eric Erickson. But letting them take the time, that the second and third stages are about giving them time and space to do something different. It's autonomy versus shame and self-doubt.
Yeah.
And then initiative versus, I know there's industry versus inferiority is the
it's
fourth
like
one.
Initiative versus direction. That's not the right word, but it's like the whole.
Initiative versus,
you know what?
Yeah.
I will link this on Chronicles of Narnia Facebook and on chroniclesofnarnia.com.
Yeah.
So if you...
I have all but the one that we want. Yeah. The initiative versus something.
She's going to call it out at 2 a.m. I'll be in our hotel
room. We're sharing a hotel room, so it's going to be great.
Hold on, sleep.
It doesn't matter what it's called.
But
yeah,
so the stage is about giving the thank you for that for celebrating my process over here instead of my product. It's about being able to allow the child to do things. Oh, we got it pulled up.
Woo!
Nice.
Thank you, Alyssa.
So first infant to 18 months is trust versus mistrust. 18 months to 3 years is autonomy versus shame and self-doubt. So that will come into play with like setting her down when she wants to be set down and allowing space for no's, because that's the first time that they're able to have like, oh, we're separate. We're a little bit, you know, like I can say no to something that you want. Initiative versus guilt. I would not have gotten there. And then industry versus inferiority is the 5 to 13. So those are the early childhood years for the purposes of this podcast. So initiative. So that actually is really helpful, that word, guilt. Because if you are celebrating their tries when they're messy, instead of being like, oh, this is so, like, you're not buttoned appropriately. You messed up your button. You're taking so long. They feel guilty for not doing it right. So if you celebrate the moments, and it's encouragement instead of praise. So encouragement is like recognizing the process and not putting a judgment value. So yeah, you would say, wow,
this time and last time you only got two.
Yeah.
Making progress.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe, did we hear that? It looks like we did.
Yeah, we did.
I want to make sure that we can hear you guys. But yeah, being able to celebrate what you're doing and just calling it out, honestly, because sometimes you can say to the child, like, wow, you really, you know, sat and listened, or I noticed that you fed yourself your peas with your hands instead of being like, we use a spoon. But celebrating that kind of like, you used your hands, you fed yourself tonight. And they're like, it's not a compliment. You're just stating a fact. You're like, literally, you fed yourself. That's actually what happened this evening. And children eventually will be like, thank you. Like, you can state a fact. You'd be like, wow, I see you used a lot of red in your art. And they're like, thank you. Because you're celebrating their process.
Hair toss.
Yeah. And it's hilarious because they learn to recognize attention as like almost in place of praise, which is better for them because then they're not praise junkies. They're not seeking the end result. They're actually engaging in the process of it, which is really what we want as adults and for the children who are becoming adults, is to celebrate the process of it and find encouragement for their wins and have forgiveness for their losses. The other thing about these crises that's really important to note is while you want them to have like the good side of of these crises, you want them to find that the world is trusting, a place to be trusted. You also want a little bit of mistrust. Like, you don't want them to trust everybody because that's dangerous. And while you want them to take initiative, you also want them to have a little bit of guilt because they feel remorse. And like, as far as like industry, you want them to experience both sides, but mostly the positive side. So allowing them space to do things, even if they take forever, and even if they do them in a way that's so inconvenient for you, celebrating how to listen so kids will talk and talk so kids will listen. They talk in that book about when they do mess up something, like if a child loses his backpack, I think is the example they talk about, being like, instead of being like, I can't believe you lost your backpack again, celebrating it as a win and rephrasing it. So being like, wow, you went 3 weeks keeping track of your backpack, and that is three times as long as last time. I'm so excited for you. Like, can't wait to see how long you have your next one for. Let's go get you one. You know, but like phrasing it in that way. And maybe the child pays for his own backpack because you can't pay for infinite backpacks. Or maybe you go get one from the thrift store and that's part of the natural consequence of continually losing your backpack, because we're not made of money. And I don't know, maybe our nanny families are, who knows? But maybe they are.
Yeah, maybe.
But that's also a way to, like, accidents. I keep thinking of potty training for you. Like, it's coming. It's on its way.
Right on the cusp into toddlerhood. Mom's due in, like, 6 months with the next little one. So it's about to get real interesting.
Yeah.
Messy.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
I believe in you, Alyssa. I believe in you.
Yeah.
That's naturally going to happen for for you. Yeah. Like, honestly, the next stage is naturally going to happen when the baby comes. Mm-hmm. And because then, you know, there's going to be lots of opportunities for her to find autonomy.
She's going to have to.
When she has to just, you know,
yeah,
fend for herself. Bring me a diaper, child, so that I can change your brother.
But they want to be contributors to the group. That was another thing that was mentioned in one of the sessions today. I had the best time today at Nanny Palooza.
The fences, the limit settings one.
Yeah, the four C's of mental, mm-hmm, like mental health and what makes you a happy human.
I have it written down.
It was like connectedness. connected
being capable.
Contribution is next.
Contribution, and then
courage.
To know you can do something that's challenging. And that's like another wonderful opportunity to ask for help, to show that adults also need to ask for help and you don't have to do everything yourself.
And that's something that actually we had talked about a little bit today, even in the bringing home baby seminar. Mm-hmm. We were talking about how to include siblings, how to make sure that they are a part of whatever process the baby is doing, right? It's like, oh, do you want to sit next to me and help me feed the baby? Do you want to hand me a diaper? Just making sure that they are included, but also not included like they're just sitting there next to you, like they are actively a part of what's happening as a family unit or as, you know, a group.
Yeah.
No, you know, not just you're doing this to the baby and I'm watching you. Mm-hmm. You know.
Absolutely.
And having another set of hands is really useful. So so that's not a bad thing all around. Ooh. Ooh.
I worked with a little boy who was 3 and his sister who was 4 months when I started with them. And he was very interested in getting the things for the baby sister. He adored her. So anything he could do, like, oh, it would be really great if I had her bottle over by me instead of over by that couch. Oh my goodness, I want to go get that for you. So he made it exciting to the point of, like, even now, she is now 10 months old and he's 3.5. He still loves to help pick up her toys. He loves to make sure that her bottle is out of the refrigerator and sitting by the warmer. And if his step stool is by the warmer, he'll put it in the warmer. And he's like, can I push the buttons yet? And it's just like what you're saying, involving them. And it's a lot easier than I think most people assume that it is.
Yeah. It also helps that child have, the older child, have a more successful day.
Exactly. Because if they feel like they've been helpful to you, they feel like they have something to feel good about themselves. And so allowing them that space, and I also appreciate the way you phrased it. You were like, wouldn't it be great if that was over here? You weren't like, go get this, no. I need this, but you're like, man, that'd be awesome. And that gave them the chance to think of it too.
I also got them to love doing the dishes, so I feel like I'm the queen of the world.
Super nanny.
Yeah. Anyway,
my 3-year-old likes to put the silverware away, but mostly just so he can play with knives.
Yeah.
But I always try to make any process that we have to do with that age exciting and fun. Yeah. Like, oh man, I have to stand here and hand wash your dishes. What can we do while I'm standing here?
Yeah.
I wonder how many times you can run around the circle-y thing. Or, you know what? You have a step stool. Do you want to stand by me?
Yeah.
Then do you see what I'm doing? This is so cool, right? Do you see how the water's spilling all over this cup? Do you think I should fill it up all the way? Should I only put a little water in it? What am I going to do now? Who knows?
Have you been brave enough to let them wash the dish themselves? Harder when it's glass.
Three?
Yeah.
So I didn't let him wash it, but I definitely let him do all the rinsing.
Yeah.
So his dishes are the only ones that got hand washed.
Yeah.
His and his sister's.
It might be fun for him to wash his own dishes, too.
If he was very expressive with his food.
Yeah.
It got a lot of places, but it was going to be the next step.
Yeah.
So they had an au pair. They were an au pair family. I was just filling in with them.
Yeah.
But that was going to be my next step, and I'm still in touch with them. And anytime I'm over there babysitting or anything, I still try to involve him in this so he still sees it as, like, not a treat, but an exciting thing.
Mm-hmm.
That, well, Lily has to stand here and do this.
Yeah.
What do you want to do while Lily stands here and does this?
Another great choice.
Are you going to go play with baby sister? Are you going to go to play with your grill? Are you going to stand here and rinse the dishes with me? It is your choice. You get to choose.
That's
all you.
And that's so great. Because not everybody can
relinquish that control in a way that feels safe for you as the nanny, because sometimes it's scary. Like, I can scramble my own egg. And I was like, ooh, can you?
Yeah.
It's
interesting taste,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Exploring your taste buds.
Yeah.
Appropriate.
But yes, and when I wrote out my kid's typical day and looked for opportunities for more choices, it was also really enlightening in how few choices, even though
yes.
that was my thesis in grad school, and
yeah.
like it's something that I feel like I actively do all the time, but I
yeah.
realized like how few choices even I was providing for them. And so I do encourage you to go through and like write out their day
mm-hmm.
down to, I mean, the minute would take you forever, but I did it in like 10-minute increments
mm-hmm.
and it is amazing.
Yeah.
Like where you can find opportunities for choice. Yeah.
It's interesting to say that because when baby number 3 came along, I taught the older boy how to program the warmer. Bottle warmer.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow.
So when we heard baby crying, I'm like, bottle warmer. So he'll pre-program it. So then I just took the milk out of the freezer and he'll put it in and press it, and then he'll stand there patiently waiting
oh.
until it went off.
Yeah.
And that was his
human
job.
Human is a quiet.
Yeah.
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 No, that was his job.
Yeah.
And he loved it so much. And little sister's job was to sing to the baby
mm-hmm.
while I changed his diaper. Because he was
wonderful.
Always so fussy.
Yeah.
It was just trying to figure out a way to get them involved.
Yeah.
Because, you know, baby comes and you just get consumed with the baby.
Yeah.
And you got to do this for the baby. And forgetting that you still have the older two that you have to take care of in
yeah.
a way. And it's so easy to forget them and just totally focus on
yeah.
the baby. And we just had to figure out a way to get them involved. So
yeah.
it was his job to warm the bottle
yeah.
and her job to sing to the baby. And it just made it so much easier on me
mm-hmm.
and it made their day so much better because they always felt a part of
yeah.
what we were doing. And the other quick
probably
thing I wanted to say was about choosing their own clothes. Oh God.
Yay, story.
I mean, it's just a case of they put on all the wrong clothes and we just had to accept that. But then I'm like, can we just say to them, let's listen to the weather.
Mm-hmm.
See what the weather's like for today. Do we need long sleeve? Do we need short sleeve?
Mm-hmm.
Do we need shorts? Do we need track pants?
Yeah.
So that's what we do. The night before, we listen to the weather
mm-hmm.
so we know what it's going to be like the next day. So when they get up in the morning and then usually they go, Patsy! Long sleeve or t-shirt? T-shirt!
Another great way to do that too is to be like, why don't you open the back door and see what it feels like outside? Or, you know, like,
yeah.
if they
get...
right.
Well, the sun is shining.
Yeah.
Oh,
what?
Yeah.
30 degrees.
If it's a seasonal, if it's a season where it's, like, all pretty consistent weather, like, it's cold out or it's going to be super hot, fall and spring are harder. I've also suggested to parents, like, have a set of drawers. And this is your seasonal. You
I
choose from
that.
The bottom two drawers
yes.
always. That's
I
your clothes choice, unless it's a crazy day, and
yeah.
then I'll warn you.
That's
and
what
then,
I did. I
yeah.
put his long pants and his track pants over here,
mm-hmm.
and his shorts on that side,
yeah.
long sleeves over here, t-shirts over here. So you open the drawer,
right.
you know which side
yeah.
you had to pick from. Does it always work? No.
Yeah, very.
No.
You have to leave space for results varying.
That's it.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
the little childcare. Girl, I mean, oh my God, I love her to death.
Jeffrey Spirit.
Yes.
I
yes.
have to get out of my head.
Yeah.
She. How she dresses herself,
mm-hmm.
she's totally fine with it. She's dressed warm enough, and we gotta roll with it. We could
mm-hmm.
have skirt on top dress,
yeah,
you know, with track pants and, you know, mismatching socks, shoes
yeah.
are on the wrong feet, we're okay.
Yeah,
she did it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, and that's another thing
she
too,
did it.
Is giving them the respect and the dignity
exactly.
of being like, if someone was continually critiquing my outfit, I'd be like, listen, like my body, my
right,
choice.
Exactly.
Like you
she's
don't get
so
to
proud
continually
to go to school
yeah,
and
yeah.
show her teachers that she dressed herself
mm-hmm.
with her multiple layers.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
that's a multi-step planning process. She
yes.
went through. That's a thing to celebrate.
And it cuts her getting dressed in half the time.
Yeah.
Than when we try to do it for her.
Yeah.
So we're good.
Yeah.
We're okay. We're
yeah.
out the door on time.
it's wonderful to celebrate that. And also the other thing too is it's hard to, this comes from boundaries as well. Is it bothering just me or is it bothering the child? You know, like where,
yeah.
And that's another thing
it's
in
a
teaching.
Great question
yeah,
to ask.
In circle time, when you do, you know, like you can imagine what a circle time's like. Sometimes there's behavior that's like not your ideal circle time behavior. But if it's not bothering the other children, if it's just bothering you as the teacher, it's like you need to really just don't say anything. Just don't
roll
say anything about
it.
It's your own.
Yeah,
yeah.
Pick your battles.
Yeah. And
I always keep that in the back of my head. I'm like, okay, this is not such a big deal.
Yeah. And furthermore on that, like you, if the first thing that somebody continually says to you every day or every morning, whatever, is like, why are you wearing that? That's not the right choice. You need, I think it's, science has shown two different things. If every negative interaction or redirection, you need two positive or three positive to continue to have a good relationship with the person. And that's for adults and children. So like spouses, friends, and if you think of it as like an emotional bank account, excuse me, it's late at night, everyone.
Yeah.
If you think of it as an emotional bank account, if you're continually withdrawing, you're going to hit red and nothing can happen on red. But if you have to withdraw, but you've put in a lot of effort on the positive relationship, which like you said, with your giving them jobs they can feel good about, that's time that probably saved you so many meltdowns you never even saw because you went right around it. You took the scenic route and gave them a job so they could feel like a contribution. Yeah.
Yes. So true. Does anyone else have strategies or questions to share, or shall we move on to uplifting stories?
Or funny stories.
Or funny stories. Yeah.
I just want to mention the first time that I had my significant other with me on the job that I was working, they noticed that I gave the child the choice. They're like, oh, are you going to do your right foot or your left foot? They'd never seen like somebody interact with a kid like that before. And to this day, it's one of the only stories they tell about me working with kids. And then I give, if they're having like a meltdown because of, oh, well, my favorite toy is not in this room, it's in the other room, and mm-hmm. it's an easy fix, but they just can't settle down,
mm-hmm.
I'll do, okay, do we need to have 30 more seconds of crying it out before we solve our problem?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we cry it out, and I cry with them. I'm like, let's cry it out. And
yeah.
They actually mentioned it to their sister, like, you know, you should do this. I saw Lily do it, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see somebody who isn't involved with children.
Noting
they're in
that
the
it was
military.
So successful.
Like, they're used to being told what to
imagine?
Do, following it through, whatever. No questions
yeah.
asked. So they were very fascinated with that
yeah.
and seeing it and being like, what? This
yeah.
works?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like,
well,
right?
And it gives them back control. And that's
it
really
does.
What makes it successful. And it's like, if you're think of your boss. If your boss is micromanaging you, which is often what we do to children when we don't offer them choices, when your boss is micromanaging you, not our bosses, of course, because they're all lovely all the time.
Yes.
Wink. If someone's micromanaging you, it's offensive. They're telling you they don't think you're doing a good job. And it's just so annoying. Nobody likes that. And so by making sure that you give the child the choice where you can in the little things, when you need to be like, this is not a choice, which is a phrase that we have to use sometimes. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's not a choice. You have to come with me in the car. I can't leave you not like at home alone. It's not safe. It's not a choice. You have to come. And so by giving them so many choices elsewhere, they're more likely to agree and come with you and understand because they know you're not their enforcer. And like the kid I nanny for, I'm continually like, I'm not the boss of you. And she was like, the first time I said that, she was like, what? And I was like, I'm not here to be the boss of you. I'm here to keep you safe and help you manage your time. That's all I'm here for. Like, and help you think through things if you need help. That's pretty much it. You're the boss of you and your body. And like, it was like mind blowing for her because they don't get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Teaching with Love and Logic, he also says that when it does come time that, or when you get to a place where you can't offer a choice,
mm-hmm.
saying
why.
Yeah, saying yeah. why, but also saying, I have given you choices all day,
mm-hmm.
or you know that when I can offer you a choice, I do. This is an area that I cannot offer you a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just have to get through this together.
Mm-hmm. And recognizing their emotions in those moments, I'm sure you all know that. Just reflecting back what you see they're feeling, like, you're so sad or you're so frustrated, I know. And sometimes just being like, I know, this is the worst. Like, it's so annoying. Grown-ups are telling you what to do. Sometimes they just give you job after job. I get that. Like, that is annoying. I hear you on that. And then being like, but this is why we have to do this right now. And then going on from there and being like, I'd love to offer you a choice about, like, going on from there and being like, would you like to do your, you have to have a shower today because you haven't had one in 3 days. Would you like to do it before or after snack or before or after dinner so that they have some power over it? Yeah, you are going to yeah. Oh, yeah.
Shower take a bath if they're of that age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can choose.
But you can choose which way. Yeah. And something that was mentioned in a workshop earlier that I have never tried and I'm so excited to try is to go along with the fantasy of it. So if there is, like, we have to get out of bed now. Like, we have to wake up. We've got to get our day started. But saying, wouldn't it be nice? And just, like, going as far as you can with that. Yeah. Like, wouldn't it be nice if we got to lay in bed for 3 more hours and then we got to go downstairs and have waffles and hot chocolate and then, you know, and letting them build that fantasy with you and then saying, oh, that would be nice, but we cannot. We must start our day.
Sometimes you don't even have to. That's a tactic in How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk, which is a great book if you haven't read it. But that's a tactic.
Exactly what she mentioned that in the book.
Yeah. It's a tactic that works. And I've done it many times for, like, things like treats are a big point of contention in the household that I work in because they have a treat policy of, like, treats are only on the weekends or a special occasion on the week. And so sometimes the child obviously is like, can I please have X, Y, or Z? And I'm like, I'm so sorry. Your family policy is no. And she's like, but I want ice cream. I was like, oh, let's get, like, huge bowls of, like, here you go. Or, like, pretending, like, here's a 27 scoop of ice cream. What flavor are you going for first? And you don't even have to be like, we don't have to do that.
Right.
You just pretend like, I'm going to serve you 27 pizzas. Like, let's have pizza every day this week. Because they know you're joking. Yeah.
Got it.
And you're not, like, you're not being like, you can't. I'm sorry. Like, you're not being so harsh. And so using humor is a great tool for redirecting. And that's funny. And it's like, you're not their enemy, you know, you're on their side. So it's a great tactic. You're and like, oftentimes you don't have to be like, we can't, because they know they can't most of the time. So just being like living out that fantasy.
Even with the youngest kids, it seems like that worked. Like last week, my almost 2-year-old wanted to watch a little bit more TV, and it, you know, the tears were happening, this wailing on the floor. And when it got to the point in the tantrum where I offered to hug her or hold her, or she could sit beside me, I said, you know, sometimes I just want to watch TV all day and lay in bed. And, but, you know, if we did that, it wouldn't be special, and our bodies would hurt from sitting all the time. And, you know, you'll get a little bit of TV time later when I have to go rock sister.
Yeah.
And eventually,
Well, because you're not, like, so, you know, like...
And not even two, that got through to her.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, wonderful.
Respect starts early.
Yeah, it does. And
it does.
They're one of the
and
groups...
And it's a two-way street.
Yeah. And they're one of the groups who have the least amount of respect and choice. Like, them and the elderly. It's very hard for them. They have... they're at high risk for losing dignity, and they're at high risk for being... emotionally abused, if you will, and not even in the harsh, angry way, in the not listening way, in the being rejected way,
and or so, ignored.
Yeah,
your opinions don't matter.
Exactly, like the subtle messages.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're not a full person. At this stage in your life.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And offering choice, full circle. Offering choice helps them to feel like they have, they're being respected.
And it keeps coming back to me with it being, you know, over this conferences. If you have a 12-hour day and it seems just dragging on and on, if you give the kids choices and just, like, have them especially do their own things, that's going to take the whole day. Because I realized I fix her meals. I, like, pick out her clothes. If I gave her the choice and the time to make her choice, that day's going to go a lot faster or slower. But slower but faster.
It's empowering to you as an nanny to be like, let me know when you've decided what you want for law.
I'll be right here.
Yeah. Within reason. All right. Let's do some uplifting stories.
Or funny stories.
Or funny. Yeah.
I have a story.
Feel free to come close to the microphone, everybody.
For your stories, please come close, because I want these to be crystal clear.
It's not exactly a funny story. It's a very uplifting story. And I am a super lucky nanny in that my bosses are very perceptive to my love language, which is words of affirmation, and they are always letting me know how appreciative they are of me and everything that I do, and the mom is always like leaving like super sweet notes around, or she knows that I had like a tough day, she'll like come back with like a new like Starbucks mug or just something, little sweet things to let me know that she is thinking about me, and that, again, because it's my love language, goes a long way with me. So recently, like I said, my little one is 14 months, and she is teething hard. Mm-hmm. We have some molars coming in, and it has been really rough. And recently we had a day where she was just out of sorts, just not herself. Mm-hmm. She's usually, like, the baby to go and, like, play and do her own thing and this and that. And she was just really snuggly and just wanted to be on me and just in a lot of pain. And when mom came home one day, it was about 4:30 in the afternoon, and little Lev had just gotten relief. We finally switched to Motrin, and she had fallen asleep on me. Mm-hmm. And so mom came in, and I kind of told her about her day. And I came in the next morning to the sweetest note that I will read to you now. It says, "Alyssa, as you left tonight and baby girl was so snuggly and sad, I realized how much love you give her each and every day. Today, you spent 6+ waking hours loving on her, soothing her, and tending to all her needs. Me, only 3 hours, and one of them was so rushed I could barely tell you her mood. Don't ever think it is lost on me everything you do. There is no jealousy from me on your love of our little love that so many other moms feel, just a sense of being blessed that we have you. With love and appreciation, Mom Boss." So I have pictures of it on my phone that I was reading it from, because I read this, and the morning that I read it, I had stayed overnight. They left out of town to go out of town super early, so I stayed overnight, and this girl has been sleeping 12 hours a night since she was 4 months old, and for the first time, I mean, I would say in years, but she's 14 months old. She woke up.
Emotional years.
Like teething becomes.
She had woken up in the middle of the night. I got up with her like 1:30 in the morning, gave the Motrin, gave the bottle, like soothed her back to sleep. And I was up at like 6:30 in the morning. You know, like I said, the parents were out of town, and I saw this note, and I was in tears at 6 in the morning. And I just, you know, texted her right away. I was like, "This is so sweet. Thank you so much. Like, this means a lot. And I know that you know this means a lot in this moment." And that was really wonderful to see.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
That
was
beautiful.
Thank you.
That was beautiful. The mom I worked for.
Come to the mic, my friend.
Yeah.
I have a really loud voice. Do you really want me to get closer?
Yeah,
I can be loud.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Okay, you can be loud for me.
If anybody knows my name, Liliana, you know I can be loud. No, the mom I had worked for, she speaks words of affirmation, which is great because it's my second love language. My first is physical touch.
Somebody
she always now.
Women in this room about love languages.
Pat yourself on the back. And if not, it's a great resource.
It is a great resource. But she, since mine is physical touch, she always makes sure that she gives me a hug now when I go to babysit or anytime that I'm there. But during the last week that I was with them full time, she made sure every single day she told me how much I really had helped them.
Oh,
I had gone into a really horrible situation where the previous caregiver wasn't doing an adequate job.
Mm-hmm.
So both kids were they were suffering. They were hurting. They were suffering. They didn't get the love and nourishment that they needed from a caregiver.
Yeah.
So I stepped in. I did my thing, and I, like, switched everything around, and she tells me, and also anybody else who will listen, that from the very first week that I started, that she completely lost all of her stress over leaving her kids at home. And this is a very attached mother. Yeah.
Because it's scary to leave your children, even with anything that you know. Sometimes it's still really scary because you hear all those terrible news stories.
Exactly.
But like, how wonderful that she feels the peace to be and do her job well, because that makes her a better mom when she comes home, because she was able to leave that there then.
Exactly.
And she didn't have to feel like a failure at work, and she could come home and be with, like, truly with her children. That's really special.
Yeah, but she always, her favorite thing to say is that I was the perfect mix between Mary Poppins and Mrs. Doubtfire. Oh, I don't think I will ever get a higher compliment than that. Or like, okay, that is perfection. Yeah. Can I even get any better? I mean, obviously yes, but that's like peak right there.
If you have a business card, you should put that on your business
card. Definitely. And you can like cite her.
I'm still getting it together, but now I'm going to.
Yes. It's a great compliment.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Yes, thank you so much for sharing that. Anyone else?
Cher, you look like
Yeah.
I love to talk.
Yeah.
Come closer.
Or project.
You're in the right room.
It's your choice if you want to come closer or project.
My choice
you
is to come
choose.
Closer.
Okay.
That is such a smart choice that you just made.
Yes.
I'm very proud of that choice.
I've been empowered. Okay, so Thursday, before I left to come here, the five-year-old and his little sister were playing on the recliner, and I'm like, oh God, a battle is going to ensue, because they always get into it on this recliner. I'm like, you know, I'm going to let them figure it out. I'm not going to get involved.
Yeah.
I am trying to get through this day because I got to come all the way over here and trying to get my zen together. So I'm in the kitchen, you know, doing the last minute stuff, and I hear them back and forth. I want to come on the couch with you. I want quiet time. I don't want you on the couch. You need to give me my space. You can have it after a few seconds.
Wow.
And then apparently little sister, she either kicked or she did something physical to her big brother.
Mm-hmm.
And my antennas went up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I heard him say, and it just brought tears to my eyes, I heard him say, you need to treat me the way you want me to treat you.
Oh,
oh.
Yeah.
Which
They're
is
listening.
Something which is something I have been saying to them for as long as I can remember. Like, you've got to treat others how you want them to treat you.
Yes.
Which
that
is something I
oh,
yeah.
And to hear him say it, I'm like, he gets it.
It's working.
and then she said, okay.
Oh.
Oh.
And that was that.
That's
and
so
I'm like,
lovely.
I'm off to Daddy Palooza.
That's amazing.
That is, but you know what else I noticed in that story is that it sounds like all of their language was mirrored from you.
Yeah.
Because all of
Mom
them.
And Dad always say that.
And teaching them like the boundaries too of like how children can set their own. I need space. How about
I need
separate,
quiet time?
Like,
yeah.
And that's what I say to them. I said, if you don't want to play with each other, then I need to be by myself.
Yeah.
I need some quiet time.
Yeah.
You always use your words. We're big on them using their words
and
expressing how they feel.
Absolutely.
So it was just, it made me feel so warm inside that this five-year-old could just say to his little sister, you need to treat me how you would want me to treat you.
It reminds me of the word impression, like you've made an impression on them. But when you think about an impression, it's literally an indent of whatever the other vessel is. And so you've left, like you've pushed part of you into them, not in a forceful way, but in a gentle way.
Yeah.
And you've left a mark of your soul on them. And that's what makes the world a better place. Cause
definitely.
You hear nanny horror stories, but you're like a handprint on their heart and on their soul, and that's what building the future. That's the Nanny Palooza theme, is building the future and the art of building the future. That's this year's theme. Woo!
Woo!
But that's part of the, you know, like it's the magic of being a nanny. It's what makes this job so valuable and important. Is you're shaping little hearts and minds.
When you think they're not taking it in, they're taking it in.
Yes. Little sponges.
They're sponges. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, it may be, okay, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
and you're giving them the skills to manage. Also, it's a nanny win because you're giving them the skills to manage their own fires and you don't have to intervene as much. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
impressions on little ones, especially like my little one. She like she'll pull up and sometimes she'll kind of like make a little grunt when doing so. And her mom commented one day, she was like, "Why does she do that?" She'll like pull up and she'll be like, "Ah." And she'll be like, "Ah." And I'm like, "I don't know. That's so weird." And I picked her up, and as I was setting her on my hip, and I was like, "Huh, all right, here we go." You know, and I like would reach for something and I was like, "Ugh," like making all these grunting noises, and I was like, "Oh, oh God, she's doing that because of me." Like,
my little one, apparently I make a noise after I take a drink of coffee, and I gave her a plastic coffee cup to play with, and she's doing, I'm like, "Oh my gosh." And she continuously still does it. Not from her own sippy cup, but if she has like a cup that resembles a coffee cup, she'll
make it. That's crazy. That's so funny.
I must do that in front of you a lot.
Well, and that goes to show you, too, that the things that you do every day, every second of the day, they're watching, they're absorbing, and they're spitting it back out, for better or for worse. So let's use our powers for good and not for evil. You know, like, that being able to be in charge of, and like we talked about earlier, many of us have, like, for whatever reason, like, no desire to curse. I can get, like, stabbed in the foot. In fact, one time I got hit in the back by my car door, like, the sharp point of my car door. And I was like, ah, and, like, no desire to curse, nothing. But sometimes in my own life, when I'm injured around adults, it is not the same result. So, like, there's a, you know, there's clearly a switch that we have because we value children so much. And that kind of stuff is like, it's interesting to see what comes through. Yeah, that doesn't sound like an end of a sentence, but it is, because I'm putting a period there.
Wonderful.
Anybody else want to share?
Well, just you saying for the good or the worst.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a time when I had to go pick up a friend with my nanny child because her car broke down.
Yeah.
And so mom gave us permission to go pick her up. Well, my friend is telling me what happened to her car. And then all of a sudden from the back seat, we hear, "Oh man, no way." And she goes, "Are you kidding me?" And my friend's going, "That's what you say." Whenever I get upset, like, you know, I say things like that.
Right now?
And she's just sitting there dying, laughing quietly while that's going on. Yeah, she was exactly what I say with the intention that I say it.
Yeah.
Cracked us up.
It's so fun. It's fun to see what they pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of my nanny kids picked up the word chillax from me, which I did not know that I used until one day the dad was home and I said something and I said chillax apparently, and he goes, "Oh, that's where they got it." And I was like, "What?" And I turned beet red. And I was like, "I'm really sorry." And he's like, "No, we think it's hilarious."
Yeah.
But it's amazing.
Yeah.
The vocabulary that will be reflected back at you.
Yeah.
I worked with a different little boy years ago, and his parents were avid wine drinkers.
Ah.
So... as you all probably know where this story is going.
Yeah,
that's fun. He would grab his fake lawnmower and pick up one of the fake cups and say, "Ugh, me and my wine, we just gotta go do some yard work. I'll be right back, Lily. Just gotta drink my wine."
That's so funny.
Constantly, all the time, he would just talk about his wine cup, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not hurting anyone.
Yeah. You're not actually drinking
alcohol.
When, you know, you turn 21, come to me and I'll give you some good suggestions. Yeah. But until
buy him a bottle to age for 21
yes.
years.
Yes.
Yeah. Love your nanny because you always talked about wine.
Wonderful. Well, I think we're going to call it there. But... thank you all so much for coming and for sharing. And this was just wonderful. I really, really appreciate everyone being here.
I want to clarify, she's talking to the people in the room and not the listeners.
Yeah.
I can tell by the eye contact, so she's not thanking you.
I'm not thanking,
except the physical bodies in the room.
Yeah, just the physical bodies in the room. But also, thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Or next year.
Or next year at Nannypalooza.
In Anaheim.
In Anaheim. We can say it because it's coming out now.
Woo!
All right, one more Nanny Palooza, ready? Nanny Palooza!
Chronicles of Nania is produced and hosted by Martha Reddick. Artwork by Noni Amadon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.